A former pro gamer became a multi-millionaire day trader using a highly systematic approach. This is Brian Lee, a highly intelligent stock trader who developed his own trading systems and technical indicators. Brian is really well known for his involvement in the Twitter trading space, where he shares freely his systematic trading approach. He started trading just like most of us, thinking that the buy low, sell high approach would make him rich. He realized that he needed to move away from emotional trading and study systematic trading systems to achieve high risk reward. Today, I'm very honored to have Brian Lee here on the Humble Traders podcast to share with you the four pillar grading system for trading strategies, creating a systematic approach for high risk reward setups, the compounding approach to risk management, and last but not least, fundamental analysis techniques for small cap trading. If you're looking to take your trading to the next level, then get ready to absorb as much as you can from Brian Lee today. And don't forget to smash the like button down below. At this stage of your trading career, how would you describe your current edge as a trader and what's been working for you?
Edge hasn't really changed. You know, it's been 7-8 years. It's just small caps trading.
Okay.
You know, they typically trend lower, obviously. Everyone knows that with the stats, the dilution, just the overall mania, right? Just things get overextended quite often. You see like 500% runner, 1,000% runner. You know, at some point, in terms of mean reversion, it's just some of these stocks deserve to be there. Some of them don't. Most of them don't. So the edge exists there. I think, like, you know, it's easier said than done, right? Mean reversion, it's like, yeah, you catch the backside. That's great. There's a lot of room to trend downwards. But it's a very dangerous game because you can blow up, things can go wrong, you guess, right? So for me, the edge is kind of like systematizing that, and that hasn't really changed. And I think that would work basically, you know, it works, let's say when the SPY crashed back in COVID, it will work in any kind of instrument. So, you know, people do it all the time. You see a lot of traders trading like SMCI, Tesla, GameStop was like that, AMC back in the day. Mm-hmm. So it's mainly just mean reversion as a whole, that whole umbrella.
And before we dive into like the specific details of how you trade and your strategy, what can you tell our viewers about your most memorable trade? Whether it's like a loss or a win, and what makes it memorable?
I have two. So my worst trade is a blow up back in 2018. I was doing really well for the whole year, and I just started making these mistakes of like getting caught emotionally because I was sizing up too much.
Okay.
And so once it like kind of went up to my stop loss and I was oversized and it like slipped past me, I just started averaging down. And basically like that worked once or twice, right? And eventually it catches up to you because that's just like a cardinal sin of trading, just averaging down.
Yeah.
I think I blew up like 50 to 70% of my account back then. And that stock was called WATT. If someone wants to look it up.
Okay.
But it was a really ridiculous stock. I think it went up just like infinitely, it felt like. And I got so stressed out that I give up. Like I couldn't think anymore. I just let the position stay there. I was like, I'm going to hope that it comes down later. I literally went down and took a nap for a couple hours. And I was so stressed out. It's just like, I think my cat could tell. My cat came down and slept with me. And I was just like praying. I was just so nervous. And I woke up and I got margin call at the exact top. And of course, like it came straight down and I would have been fine. But, you know, these kind of habits, they really like ingrain something in you. It's just like this terrible experience is like, I just never want to go through it again. And that was before it was something people talked about. Like no one talked about max losses back then. Or even now people have auto liquidations and whatnot. So like those are systems that I implement today that would have solved that issue back then. Because I think like every trader kind of goes through so many emotions, and if you start breaking rules and get rewarded, like that's the ultimate failure. So for me, like I took that to heart, just never let that happen again. My best trade ever was like on GameStop when it went insane. So I waited, you know, for many, many days, and what I think was like going to 500 or maybe was it, I think it was 500.
I think the highest was 500.
So it was the day it was like a first major crack. What I was most proud about that was like, there's this pattern that a lot of OTC traders trade actually. So it's kind of like, there's like the pump. I'm gonna do it the way I see it. So it's like a pump and then it pulls back And then usually what people do is they call it the trifecta. So what happens is like it goes up, so you short it, it comes down, you cover it, it goes back up. So sometimes people long it and then on the bounce they short it again and it comes back even lower. And that's the trifecta where you go short, long, short. And I actually did a quadfecta because it went up, it ping ponged four times.
Oh, okay.
And normally I usually just hold the position.
Yeah.
But I was like so dialed in that day and just kind of like, I was like, I've seen this before. Even though it was an OTC pattern, I was like, I'm seeing this real time on like a super insane pumped stock. And so I literally traded it four times, like exactly how I needed to. And I was like, this is my best trade ever. So for me, that was the most memorable because I don't trade like that. And I just, something like my instinct kicked in. I was like, I've seen this. And that's kind of like what I think traders, it's most akin to like a flow state of like sports. It's just kind of like, the challenges there, your skills are there, and just kind of meets perfectly. And you're like, wow, this is amazing. So for me, that's the best.
And that was the trade when it went from 500 down to 75 and then bounced back to 400, right? You're talking about that particular day.
I don't know. Did it
I think it halted multiple times downside too.
I don't think it went that low in that day. I have it on my Twitter. I'd have to look it up again. It was quite a while ago, but yeah, it's a super memorable trade.
Mm.
I'm sure if you go on my feed, you search up like GME, you'll find it because I only traded a couple times.
Let's go back to the very beginning. I know nowadays you have tons of different systems for like entries, exits, and for your entire strategy. Mm-hmm. But if we go back to the beginner trader, Brian, how did you get started in trading and what was trading like in the early years?
Oh, okay. So I started getting into trading from like just Tim Sykes as usual, right? And I did the whole thing that everyone does. It's like you come into it and you're like, why would I pay locate fees? Why would I go short? It's so much more complicated. People say you can lose infinite. Like I will just trade the long side of these small caps. And so I just paper trade that out and it was just, it's no good. You know, you don't get the emotions. You don't understand why people are all primarily short. And basically like you take that to the market, which is what I did, and immediately just started getting annihilated because everything's just going down, you know?
Right.
The most obvious pattern is like breakouts. So people are like, you buy the breakout. And obviously in small caps, you buy the breakouts, literally the exact top every time.
Yeah.
So I learned quickly like why people are going short, completely flipped to short. Everything started going way better because just naturally there's the gravity factor.
Okay.
And, you know, basically like people didn't really teach you that much, not very useful information. I came across a guy called Team 3D Stocks on Twitter.
Oh, I think I follow him too.
All Day Faders. I think he's single-handedly responsible for generating like over nine figures of wealth amongst like many traders.
Mm.
Even some individual traders, like literally just nine-figure traders themselves from his feed. And it's just like, I could just see how he was speaking so much truth. The way he talked was so different than everyone else, the value he was providing. And I was like, I got to study everything. So he's one of those traders that people, they literally go back to day one and just see everything and take notes and like have screenshots of everything he's saying. I was one of those people. I downloaded his whole feed and I was like, cause he said many times, like, I'm going to delete this probably. And thankfully he never did, but he was a huge influence. And I kind of just like studied him like he was the Bible, like it was my religion. And then after that, I really found like a really good strategy for myself. He was always harping on risk management, risk reward, position sizing. He talked about why stocks have edge. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. So for him, I would say he's probably like the number one resource for me. And he stopped kind of tweeting, slowed down a lot. And so I think a lot of traders, like let's say what's different between now and then is that back then there's a lot of trash, but you find one person or two people who's like so much value. And back then he was one of those people. Another person was kind of like Mike Katz from Seven Points Capital. He always posted like different resources and different like strategies and stuff like that every single week and just really good psychology.
So is it because like you learned so much from him on Twitter that you feel like nowadays you feel like the need to give back?
It's just like, I feel like some lessons in trading are so obvious and so easy to implement. Like I hated the experience of blowing up so much. And like the not knowing of like different money management principles and things like that I feel like those are things that I can share pretty freely and like that I know are super effective because I've done it, I've lived it, experienced it and succeeded with it. So I feel extremely confident to say like what I think about it. And I don't think that those things like necessarily ruin my edge.
Okay.
Right. So that those are things that I feel really confident about. And in fact, like, you know, yeah, you do have to find your edge, but like at the end of the day, these things are really important because you see traders burn out all the time. Like they have huge parabolic runs and they just lose it all. And so at the end of the day, you do need to know these things. So it just really hits close to home. Like it's something that I feel like people don't need to go through.
I know you mentioned you were losing a lot of money from going long in the very beginning and you found out about shorting. How has since then, like discovering shorting, how have you kind of pivoted? How have you built your strategy around it to get you eventually from blowing up accounts, like you said, to now consistently profitable?
I think, timing was a really big thing, right? Like if you had the right skills and you had the right kind of education going into COVID, that was like a huge explosion of liquidity and opportunity. And for me, I think just like, you know, every trader I feel has like a certain timeline. What I say is like, it takes about 2 to 3 years for someone to go from being a complete noob to actually being able to be consistently profitable. And typically like that depends a lot on how much effort they put in. So what I would say is if you put in, let's say 10 to 16 hours a day, then that timeline's a little bit more accurate than, let's say, if you take, you know, 4 to 6 hours, 8 hours a day, you're going to get there a little bit slower. So try to like extrapolate that for yourself. But usually in the first year, people are pretty inconsistent, just learning, you know, no matter how much knowledge you have, you still have to execute.
Yeah.
So for example, I'm teaching my little brother, he's like 20, how to trade.
Oh, okay.
And I started him out on like the right foot. Like, he knows information. He knows how to study and like do due diligence, stuff like that. He knows the knowledge component. And we just got on the DOS demo recently. And it's like, you know, he's making a lot of mistakes, right? He doesn't know how to execute. He doesn't know what does that look like. I tried to like show him beforehand, you know, this is what a level two looks like. This is what, right? But no matter how prepared you are, you still have to go through it and experience that, get that muscle memory. So I think in the first year, like, you can't really expect to make money necessarily. You should just learn the skill, learn the details of trading. In the second year, typically, like after you kind of try a lot of different things, you should be able to find your consistency, like cut out setups that don't really fit for you, that you don't show promise in. You know, you should be able to identify like, hey, this is something that I can probably cut everything out and just commit to this. That's kind of the path in year two. And usually you're just building your confidence there, building your account up. And then typically like after that, you can start sizing a bit more. And that's usually where people go kind of have like exponential success, because trading is kind of one of those things where, you know, you can make your year in like a week or a day or a month or things like that. So basically try to be really patient with yourself. And essentially like by the point that COVID hit, I had already kind of been through that stage where I'm like on my third, fourth year. And I was just hitting my stride at the right time. So timing was a big, big deal. And so, yeah, you know, like I learned a lot about exploring different aspects of small caps. So I tried to go heavy on the fundamentals. So I was like 90% fundamentals. So I had to have the right kind of dilution set up and everything like that. And then I went the other way to like 90% technicals. Okay. And I kind of, at this point in time, I just kind of leveled out. But I think just kind of really focusing on each aspect of trading is going to give you like a really good, well-rounded approach to just understanding the market. And in fact, like one thing about COVID was that since there were so many opportunities popping up, it was almost impossible to do like a really proper fundamental analysis. It's similar to right now, actually. In February of this year, the market started to heat up. You know, it's a bull market. You're just seeing tons of setups and stuff like that. It can be very overwhelming. So you have to do a very efficient job of just being like, okay, I know enough about the stock. I know enough about the fundamentals. I might not be able to like maybe read into all the filings and stuff like that, but I get the gist of it. And that's kind of what you need to do, because when the market moves this quickly, you have to be able to act, otherwise you miss your timings. So you have to have a proper understanding of technical fundamental. One of the big things that I changed in 2022 is called the four pillars. It's a concept that I learned from another nine-figure trader. And he basically said, like, he described it as three pillars. I just added my fourth pillar. The three pillars originally are technicals, fundamentals, and news.
Okay.
So basically incorporating all aspects of that into your analysis of the stock, like how you grade it, how you perceive it, what's the opportunity going to be like. And then I added cycle, because I feel like the market environment is actually quite important. There's like a cyclical nature to trading in general, but also very specifically to small caps.
Okay.
Where like there's basically extreme greed and extreme fear.
Yeah.
And both shorts and longs experience it. And that leads and perpetuates different types of moves. So understanding that can really help you in a way that, like, let's say you understand technicals, fundamentals, and news, but it's an environment where shorts are extremely greedy, oversizing, compounding their accounts, and like they're very prone to squeezes and blowups and halts and things like that. You could have the best kind of like scenario and rate this trade as an A plus, but the cycle can completely invalidate that, or it can make it more difficult to execute. So being perceptive of cycles is really important. At the end of the day, it's all market psychology. It's like who feels good, who does not feel good, where does the vulnerability lie in terms of human emotion? And once you know that, it's kind of like that changes the way that you color your experience of the market and how you're gonna react. So I think that's, those things are really important. And just basically, if you're kind of following the track of what I was saying, is like I went full in on fundamentals to like really understand it. Then I went to the technical side to really understand it. And then eventually I incorporated the news and then I incorporated the cycle. So you kind of just like want to really have a strong foundation in each one of those things.
Yeah.
And then marry it together at some point.
So you just mentioned like the four pillars of trading. How do you apply that to kind of your trading process every day now?
So a very beginner skill that I basically teach to people is called putting together an ADF score, which is basically All Day Faders created that.
Okay.
And essentially it's a grading rubric. So essentially you can give each component of those pillars a set of points and essentially like have it add up to 100. So for example, you make like an Excel sheet and you say, hey, technicals, I think that's about 40% of the score. Fundamentals might be 30%. News might be a little bit less, like 5 or 10%, something like that. And essentially like you want those to add up. And basically like when you're doing your analysis, you might say like, oh, this stock is, you know, like it's a 500K float, like technically, or even like fundamentally, you know, that's extremely dangerous. You know, that kind of float is something that can pull the score down, as opposed to something's more normal float, then you might rate that a little bit higher. Same goes for fundamentals or dilution. You might say like, oh, well, this is a in the money kind of dilution and it's good supply. It's not recently been tapped and things like that. And so you might rate that score quite high. Mm. And essentially like that should spit out a grade like A, B, C, D, stuff like that. And that's a very like basic way to say it. But essentially you're basically training yourself to view and also categorize with scores each component of those pillars and then combine those together to like really evaluate the opportunity in a whole. So once you basically do that enough, pretty much at the point that I'm at, like you just internalize that. Hmm. So instead of having to like type it out into an Excel, I just kind of know like, oh, this is how I would evaluate it. And I just understand the opportunity as a whole. So you're just building that skill until you can like really properly understand a setup. Because I think what happens is at the very beginning, what I realize is that setups that I would like internally just on first impression evaluate quite low might actually be really good trades, or really good trades I might evaluate quite low. So the scoring system really helps put it all into like a numerical value that you can understand. And I think like the first step to building it is basically like no matter where you start, you're gonna see good opportunities. So imagine you see a setup that had a perfect fade or like a really good price action that you want to capture in the future and that you haven't. Essentially, you just want to reverse engineer that setup. So typically what people do if they don't look at pillars is they'll look at one aspect of it. So they'll say like, oh, it was a really big extension, or it was like, or they had a fundamental thing or something. Like they won't really have a comprehensive understanding of it. And even probably the least comprehensive might be the cycle, which is kind of maybe the hardest thing to understand, because you have to trade long enough to experience it quite a bit, or just like rely on someone else's experience. However, like not many people talk about it anyway. So essentially like you reverse engineer a setup under that lens where you try to put together all those categories, and you want to make sure that your score will equal, let's say, an A plus, because that's the best trade you've seen. It might not be the best trade in the world, but that's the best trade you've seen.
I see.
Now you want to use that rubric to basically evaluate trades going forward. So basically as you evaluate trades, you're comparing it to the best trade and you're just, you know, ranking them in comparison. Now, like, let's say that you miss a setup, like your rating system right now ranked something as like an F and it like actually was a good move. Well, like you might want to tune those scores. So it's going to have this self-regulating effect where you might say like, oh yeah, I really devalued or de-emphasized like the technical aspect of this trade. And in order to capture this trade in the future, I need to make sure my score captures that as a viable trade. So you would adjust your score to capture the new opportunity. And as you keep doing this, you'll have the opposite effect too. Like your score said maybe this trade was a B or a C, but in fact it was like it should be an F. So you just tune it constantly, and eventually you get it to a point where it's like you are taking the trades you should take and you're not taking the trades you shouldn't take, and you're seeing things properly. So like it's just something that evolves with time, and you know, depending on how much experience you have, you can build it much quicker.
So is that kind of the process you'll go through for every kind of set of strategy you use, and not just that single one, all day fader?
Well, I do like to trade basically the same stuff.
Okay.
Like, I say it's a mean reversion umbrella. I mean, like there's lots of different setups. It's not just like, you know, they might look the same. It might be part of the same niche.
Because they all look like a short.
But there's different.
Yeah.
There are different setups in them. So there's like, you know, overextended gap ups, like stocks that are already extended and they gap up even further. Those will be different than like a day one trade or like first red days or multi-day moves that might take more days to break down. Just there's a lot of different factors. There's technical trades. There are trades that are purely fundamental. And so even though it all looks the same, there's so much nuance that I would say, like, even just in small caps, there's at least probably like 10 setups, even though they look the same on paper.
Oh, I see. And how much, I know you mentioned you read into the filings a lot. How, because it used to be, at least from my experience, maybe prior to 2020, reading filings, just that enough will provide you an edge. But nowadays, there's like so many different like services providing the SEC filings. I feel like a lot of that edge has like kind of disappeared. So how do you, nowadays, how do you effectively use filings and still use that as a part of an edge?
Well, it definitely matters. I think what happens is, yes, it's easier, but like people are lazy. I find that people are lazy. Like, I mean, for example, there are services like, they'll evaluate the dilution and they'll tell you straight up, like, what is there?
Oh, okay.
Right. And it's kind of like, yes, it's could be that easy. You're going to get like probably 80% of the way there, 90% of the way there, but there are little nuances that you don't pick up unless you really like pay attention. So for example, like, you know, relying on a service to constantly have up-to-date information is a mistake. Basically, like there are times when let's say they'll say, oh, this stock was, this dilution was last updated, like let's say in January, but now it's March. And could something have changed in between that timing? Yes, because maybe let's say in February, there was a day that had like a lot of volume, a lot of trading, and it was in the money. And so those stocks potentially have already diluted by this point. And if you rely on outdated information, you're not really gonna be able to piece it together. There are also different nuances and rules, like sometimes like people misattribute, let's say like a private placement is a type of dilution, or a type of the raising equity through an investment. And basically like it'll have similar verbiage to dilution. It'll say like, oh, we have warrants, we issued shares. But those shares and that type of dilution is not effective at that moment. So people will react to the knee-jerk reaction the market has and assume like, oh, there is dilution, but there's not. So you have to understand like all the different types of situations. You have to understand the people who are the underwriters of these deals and how they typically, you know, manipulate markets. You have to understand, again, seasonality is really important. Sometimes you might, again, like you might have like an A-plus setup, but there are so many people shorting it that it's going to have to squeeze first. So like a really good example is like, well, I can't give a specific example, but let's say in December, there was a lot of stocks, like probably more stocks I've ever seen that reverse splitted under 1 million shares, which is insane. It's like a nano float. Before 2023, and I saw that in December, like you almost never seen a stock under 1 million float. That was extremely rare. And so again, like no matter how good, and some of these had really good fundamentals, like A plus. It's like no matter how good that was, because of the float structure, those stocks were prone to halting at the open, making extreme moves, and then going ahead and selling off the supply. So it's like no matter what you do in terms of like analyzing the scores and analyzing the trade, the first thing that has to come to mind is risk management, number one.
Okay.
And then, you know, just position sizing properly. So it's kind of like, in trading, it's all about timing, and your analysis is just one aspect of trading. Like, you have to recognize anything can happen. It's all probabilities. But you don't want to properly identify or misattribute trades. You don't want to be looking at a trade that like looked really good and say, I need to take that in the future, when it could have just been luck. And you don't want to miss trades that you should be taking because you can't see the reason why they're actually working in the first place. So you have to be able to evaluate opportunity more holistically. And that understanding allows you to basically continue to grow and develop your strategies.
I think that also means like traders need to constantly track like all the stocks and their performance that's related to their niche or their strategy. Do you do a lot of that as well for your strategies and the ones that you trade under that umbrella?
Yes. I literally have screenshots of like nearly every single day of my strategy, like every stock that popped up. I have a screenshot of them. I have the daily screenshot, intraday screenshots, higher time frame screenshots, like 5 minutes chart or like 15 minutes, 30 minutes, et cetera. Usually it's just 1, 5 in daily for me. And basically like I can go back years and find exactly what I traded on that day, what I should have traded or what opportunities were on that day if I ever want to go back and look at it. And I also track the scores and the way that I perceived it in terms of grade. So I have all the information, and that's really, really important because like you have, like in trading, there's this feeling of like, I've seen that before.
Yes.
Pattern recognition.
Yeah.
So sometimes you see an opportunity that's being presented to you and you're like, where have I seen that before? Or like, how can I prepare for this? And if you go back and look at your records, you'll be able to find exactly what was similar and be able to basically act on that. The other thing is just reflection, pure reflection. You just want to be able to go back and I can see exactly how I executed, what the risk reward was, how much I was risking, the executions, everything like that, how I was perceiving it. So that to me is really, really important because those skills just like constantly compound. And it's just, to me, it's a best practice. It's something that even though like I have all that information, I'm not going to discontinue tracking the information because markets change. Like the way patterns have changed, volume has exploded since COVID and then since died down in 2022, which is now kind of uptaking here in 2024 because of like all-time highs and, you know, crypto, SPY, everything's going up. So we're seeing more of like a resurgence of COVID. And one thing that I think is kind of tragic is like people maybe started now or they didn't have the experience of COVID and like they get completely caught off guard. Whereas like when you have that experience of COVID, you kind of know how things change. So what's really interesting is like I've been teaching people like how to do ADF scores and like how to properly understand filings and stuff like that. And in COVID markets, a lot of times that didn't matter anymore. I had to then pivot and say like, guys, this is a COVID market. You're going to find a lot of technical setups on the pure basis that they're more quantity, there's more mania, there's higher percentage gaps. And so sometimes opportunities are presented without having a proper, let's say like fundamental situation. And so, you know, sometimes it's nice to have someone to like help kind of share their perspective and wisdom on that.
Okay.
But in general, like it's just completely different. It's like COVID's a very indescribable market. It's just complete mania. And I kind of sense that the market is similar right now, just with lower volume.
So we talked about how you kind of analyze all these stocks you trade fundamentally and the filings and all that. But how did you find them in the first place? Like, is there like a, like, how do you find stocks to trade every morning, essentially?
I run a scanner. Like, I use Trade Ideas, not sponsored by them, but like, basically you just scan for gappers and with high volume, or you keep track of stocks that were already running, like with making big moves, right? You know, everyone sees the same things, like SMCI, NVIDIA, like everyone saw those, having those meteoric rises, things like that. So you kind of keep those on radar.
Okay.
But for the most part, new stocks are constantly getting extended every single day. And so by using a scanner, that's just very simple, like scanning for, you know, over, depends on you, but like 20%, 50%, 100% gap, however you want to see it, has enough volume, has enough liquidity. Those stocks typically are my radar. And then you just run your analysis on those because those present the opportunities of mean reversion. You know, it's like if you're a long trader, you have to find the opportunities But as a short trader, the opportunity is going to come to you. So those extensions naturally lead you to think, or at least ask the question, like, is this a mean reversion opportunity or is this legitimate? Because sometimes there are, you know, small cap companies that do have big news, like they finally releasing their drug, like a biotech company, or finally getting a huge breakthrough like deal. You know, they have a 100 million, 200 million, 500 million kind of investment from a larger company, or even from a, you know, a larger tech, larger biotech company like Gilead or, you know, Pfizer or something like that, right? So those opportunities kind of change the way that they trade, but for the most part, a lot of them are, they're basically trash.
it's true. Yeah. So you now have the stocks you're watching, all the big percentage gappers. So how do you start stocking them after market opens? And how do you find, you know, an entry? And if they kind of fit all the four pillars, how do you, you know, start to plan your execution out?
Mm-hmm. So the first thing I do is I usually go straight to technicals because that usually has the easiest red flags initially. So basically I'll mark, let's say, the high point, and then I'll go to the daily chart and I'll look, how has this chart developed? Is it uptrending? Is it downtrending? Is it fresh? Is it something that is very congested and has a lot of like different levels of high volume that may or may not impact the price action? Because what happens is, like, if there are multiple, let's say, different days that we're trading high volume or just above, underneath, it's just a very messy chart. Essentially, those traders are all positioned at different points. It can be investors, it could be traders, it could be whoever. And basically, like, that makes the trade way more ambiguous than it needs to be. And it could invalidate or make certain trades a lot worse because, like, they will basically refuse to, let's say, fade because there's buyers who are beneath or whatever, like all different kinds of positioning. So that's the first thing that I look at. And then the second thing is I'm going to go straight to the filing. So, you know, okay, I'll use a service and I'll check out, like, hey, you know, what is the, you know, what's a knee jerk reaction to the stock? Like, how much dilution is there? Is it something that is like, is it a lower cap stock? Is it a higher cap stock? Is it something that is like cash rich or low cash, stuff like that? Just to analyze the most basic information about the stock. And then I'll basically take note. I usually type it out. I'll just type out, like, here's the dilution, like what is the pricing, stuff like that. See if anything is may impact the trade in the near future or is already affecting the trade. And depending on like the urgency of that, I might act on it or wait for that opportunity to arise. And then lastly, I usually look at news because news is kind of like, most of the times it's nothing burger, but like sometimes it matters and it is important to pay attention to it. Sometimes you want to see if, hey, is there like an earnings coming up? Is there a conference coming up? Is there some sort of catalyst that's creating this opportunity? If there's no catalyst, a lot of times the mean reversion is a little bit better. But if there's an actual catalyst and you can kind of reason that over time, just, hey, this is an actual big deal for this company, then that also might invalidate the trade as well, or help you understand why this move's happening, why there's so much volume, et cetera. And then lastly is the cycle. So I just look at, like, how has the market been? Usually I already come into the day with a perception of that. So I might say, like, oh, you know, this market's been just way too easy. I feel like shorts are just constantly getting rewarded. I feel like people are just growing their accounts. And basically, like, this next squeeze is coming. I already know it's coming. I don't know when it'll come, but I know it's coming. And so I'm always prepared defensively for that. Or it might be like, this market's crazy. You know, people are just buying everything. People don't care, right?
Yeah.
When that happens, like, things get extended, and that's great because that creates an opportunity. Mm. So you just want to come into the day knowing, like, what is the current condition of the trading environment. And so after I put that all together, basically, like, I'm a systematic trader. So I kind of like don't necessarily I can trust myself with discretion, but a lot of times, like, the signals and like the work that I did outside the market is much more effective at trading, because basically, like, I think like 90% of the work of trading is actually done outside the market. Like, when the market happens, you're just kind of executing on your plan, right? But like the systematizing aspect of it is, like, I have an entry criteria, and then I have like, well, I have several entry criteria. So it's like maybe starting position, like a small position, low probability. I'm not sure exactly if this deserves a risk. So I like more eager, or I'm more willing to cut, more willing to just be loose with the position. And then I have a confirmation, which basically is my signal, like, hey, let's get in full size. It's not saying like it's 100% going to work, but it's more of like, the odds are there with you and it's worth it to take the risk in case. And then I have different signals like adding. So for me, just if I see the trend continuing to work in my favor, and then I have my exit condition. So the exit condition, like really easy things for some people is just like, you know, what is a system? A system is like, if this happens, then I do that. So it's kind of like, you know, for example, like a really common strategy, which I don't necessarily think is the best, but it's good. It's serviceable. Is like, you could say, I can just use time. So you can say like, the market typically in small caps, like by, you know, mid to late day, like at some time there, you can just exit just no matter what. You can say, okay, it's gotten to this time, I'm exiting. That's my strategy. The reason why you would, let's say, trust the system, like that might on a surface sound like, oh, why would you do that? So binary. But like, basically what I said is 90% of the work's done out of the market. So you can backtest that. That's the main benefit of systems is like, you can have that same exact condition and apply it to all the setups that fall within the same kind of realm or like with the same strategy. And you can look at what's the result. Like what is, on average, is it working really well in your favor? Is it allowing you to hold the position longer than you normally would? Is it allowing you to reap more profits out of the position? Or is it a negative thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it a bad system? You can verify all that information. And again, like the more information you collect, the better. But it doesn't mean like you have to have 7 or 8 years of data. You can basically start gathering information as you go. Mm. So like if you collect information day by day, then eventually you'll have, let's say, 100 samples or you'll have like 2 or 3 months of information. You can go back and say like, if I use this system, how effective would it have been? And that is basically how I design like my whole trading strategy. So it doesn't matter if it's the open or if it's the pre-market or whatever, like it's completely fine in my opinion to trade pre-market if the liquidity is there. Obviously like the risk management is a little bit more difficult, but it doesn't really matter. As long as you can get in and out. That's my main deal with it. But basically, I'm just stalking the trade until my signals fire off. Like if I took my signals off, I kind of could guess where it would be.
Okay.
But sometimes, this is the most important part about systems is that they allow you to act in a way that is not necessarily human. Like you might perceive a situation as like, this is risky. Whereas like my signal might say, this is confirmed, like you should get in size here. And that might be at a very kind of nervous point where it's like the stock is maybe not broken down yet or the stock is not yet confirmed in your eyes because it's not trending lower and stuff like that. And I get into that trade and like I get a massive risk reward trade off of that. And it's because I put in the work to backtest my system to the point where I know like I should get in position here and I can trust it because I know it works majority of the time. So those kind of inhuman actions is where the systems really shine. And I feel like traders typically are very emotional or like, you know, once they're in trades, they kind of have heightened emotions. And when you can eliminate that aspect from your trading and just like make it very black and white, that allows you to really, you know, execute at a high level. Because you can always look back on the day and be like, well, okay, I did get nervous still. I'm systematic, but I got nervous, I got out. But you can always measure yourself against something like, oh, I need to get out here. This is what, if I was gonna evaluate myself as like 100% performance or A grade on my trading, then I would have got out on my signal. I would have got in my signal. What is the discrepancy? What is causing me not to follow my system? Is it because the system is a bit too difficult to execute? Is it because the system has certain issues? Like one thing people don't think about is like, there's something called repainting, which is when, let's say you have like a 5-minute indicator, 4 minutes goes by and it looks like it's gonna work, but on the 5th minute, it becomes invalid. So then all of a sudden the signal disappears.
I see.
Right, so like you might have a signal that on paper looks like it always works, but it's not showing you the repainting, yeah. So essentially like those are things that you need to both forward test and back test. So you can go back, let's say on Thinkorswim On Demand, and you can like test those scenarios and look for repainting. But it's so slow and so laggy, sometimes it really sucks. Overall, you just want to understand like, what are some of the drawbacks of systems? How do they fail? What are the main failure points? And it's usually between those two things. It's just too hard to execute or you didn't consider something about repainting. And basically like, once you hash all that out, you can either continue to evolve that system, make it better, make it more efficient, or you could just say, oh, this is actually trash in practice and just completely eliminate it. I mean, the way I see it is like, it's kind of like Thomas Edison, or what is it? The guy who was doing light bulbs.
Oh yeah, Edison. Yeah, yeah.
It's like Edison. It's like, you know, you just keep testing and testing and testing. 100 tries later, you might find something that actually works. And people want to come in and think like, oh yeah, I can just create a system out of my ass. But like, it doesn't take one day of like testing. It takes months or even years to figure out exactly what works. And so, just keep trying. You know, there's a lot of conditions. I don't think it's that important how people execute. It's more of like, if you get kind of good enough, if you like, I don't like short into strength. I don't like short into something going parabolic and just guess it's working. I usually short once I see like selling coming in or like pullbacks, and like, I'm usually shorting like kind of lows and stuff like that. But the thing is, like, it doesn't really matter because I'm getting into a position with a pretty good risk reward. I have way less uncertainty in terms of probability because my systems are like more backtested. And so I just feel confident, like, okay, if I get in a little bit later, I might not get insane risk reward, but I still get good enough. And that, for me, can turn into a really good trading system.
So earlier you mentioned, like, as part of your system, you have a lot of different signals, right? For initial entry, for confirmation and ads. Are these just a combination of indicators that you kind of put together to form those signals for you?
Yeah, basically. And I know it sounds like you're talking to someone who like put it together over many years. The main way to start in is like identify some area of trading that needs work. So for example, if you constantly get good entries, which is very common for people, is they focus on entries because that's seemingly the most important part of trading. So people typically have pretty good discretionary entries. Maybe you don't need to screw with that. Maybe your entries are perfectly good, but maybe you always scalp the trade. Maybe you don't let the positions work. Maybe the exit is the most important part of something that you may want to systematize.
Yeah.
So again, like, I would just find the pain point, find the thing that can be improved, and then understand, like, try to figure out a system that would encourage that like right behavior. And so again, like, exit is probably pretty easy. You can use time like 80% of the time. It'll work just fine, but you might not understand the actual true mechanic of why the stock's fading and like where the mean is and stuff like that. But overall, it still works a lot better than sometimes people, they just, they're trying to tape read or they're trying to really focus a lot on like what they're seeing. But the thing is, the market is just, it's trying to clown on you nonstop. It's like, you know, you see a washout or you see a spike and then you call it like a stuff candle. It's like it goes up and it just comes straight back down, right? And then how many times do those stocks just go the other way, right? You always get trapped. It's just not a good environment for someone to think rationally, I think, because it's like you're constantly being toyed with all the time. And so that's where these systems are really important. And if you can kind of move beyond like the human element of just like being constantly toyed with your emotions, it allows you to execute and just like take advantage of trades that you normally would just kind of mess up. So that's how you do it. Just identify one thing, work on that, and essentially like you create the condition. So it's just, let's just say it's time again. You say, okay, it's noon, it's 12 o'clock. Okay, so at noon every single day, if on the same exact setup, based on all my screenshots, if I just literally scroll through them one by one, noon, is it good, is it good? Does it go more? Okay, if it goes more, maybe 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And you just keep repeating that process and just go through all of them. And you'll see probably like, it's actually pretty good, I mean, for the most part. And if that's the case, then there's no reason that you can't make that a rule. Like, I exit at noon, and that's completely fine. So that's the type of system, but more or less the other type of systems are usually indicator-based. And I have like one really good tip is like, usually people think indicators are crap, but I don't think they're crap at all. I think like they just make it visually easier to interpret the information. I mean, everyone says like, oh, you can just look at the chart, you can just look at the volume and stuff like that. But like, can you actually literally imagine like a moving average on your chart? I don't think most people can from day one just know where a moving average is, how it's trending, how it's interacting with the price. But if you see the moving average, then yeah, you could take it off later and then you'll know what it looks like. So it's kind of like, I think you should give it a try. And then maybe if it's not useful, you'll at least know how it behaves. But like to say, okay, newbie, don't use it, it's completely useless. I think that's kind of foolish because that could be something that could actually improve your trading. You know, okay, so back to the tip. So you have indicators, let's say like a 1 minute indicator is gonna be very noisy. You're gonna get like signal. You can use the default indicators really. But the thing is, like, because it's so noisy, you can't assign like a good level of probability to it. One thing you can do is add like a second layer. You can add another indicator to create two triggers that have to go off at the same time to invalidate like multiple signals. But an easier way to do this is actually just shift it to a higher time frame. So for example, a 1 minute indicator is too noisy, but it like accomplishes more or less kind of what you're like sort of looking for. You can move it to like a 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute, 5 minute, et cetera. And you'll notice that the signals get less and less noisy. Like you're gonna get, you know, instead of having 15 signals, you might have like two signals. And the thing is like, if you can get two signals and you just put like, you know, 1 R risk on each one of them, okay, maybe you lose 1 R on the first signal. The second signal you get in and it works, you get 3 or 4 times your risk and 4 R, then that system works. I think people are just thinking more of like, how do I get in the exact perfect entry that works every single time that never fails? That's not systematic trading. Systematic trading is like, this signal gives me like a 50% probability that my risk is going to hold. I can therefore put on a risk for that situation. Like maybe you put on 1 R. Sometimes people are less confident. They'll be like, okay, I'm going to put on like half position here. You basically like have a confirmation that you say, okay, I can put on full position now. Like the odds maybe went from 50% to 80%, and then that you feel comfortable with. Like that's what systematic trading is in a nutshell. You combine it with risk reward so that you can be wrong and you can make mistakes. But the thing is like, it's gonna help you avoid so many situations where you're just seeing stocks go up and then pull back. You're like, oh, I gotta get in. You short it, you get stopped. Okay, I'm gonna get in again. And you just do that over and over again, right?
Yeah.
You wanna develop a signal that literally doesn't appear that many times. So you can just chill and wait for it.
I think it was you on Twitter that I read that you overall had a low win rate, but you have like a really, really good risk reward. Can you tell us about how you use that to your advantage? Because having a low win rate means you lose quite often, right? But at the same time, that means when you do make it, that the profit is a lot bigger. So how do you structure that into your day-to-day trading? How do you not feel kind of defeated when you keep taking losses?
Well, it's partly by design, partly by choice. So when people think of win rate, they think of like, I'm full position, I lost. But it's actually more about like average win and average loss. Mm-hmm. So on average, like let's say I want higher risk reward trades, so I'm willing to put on more riskier positions. So back to the systems, like I might put on a half R position, like half of my full size, onto a trade with a 30% probability or like a 40% probability. The trade-off is that you get in much closer to your risk level, so it's a little bit tighter risk, better risk reward eventually. But the downside is that you're going to be wrong a lot. So in my mind, like losing half an R is nothing. I'm like, oh, I lose half an R, who cares? I lose half an R, who cares? To me, it's just paper cuts. Mm. I would never be full size in those positions. So it's not like I'm losing every single time a significant amount of money. To me, it's just not enough. Whereas like I know the eventual downside is, or the eventual upside, I'm thinking downside because I'm a short seller, but like the upside is essentially like you get the greater risk reward if it does work. The probability is like sort of there, but it's like not too bad. And then if it does work, you build into that position and you start adding more position as the trade's working. The probabilities go higher, you can move your stops down, you can get a much larger position, and eventually by the time it reaches your target, like you're in for a much bigger position than you were exposed to at the very top, and your probabilities are way higher, and you get a much bigger risk reward. So, you know, who cares if you lose like 3 times on half R, you lose 1.5 R, if you're gonna make 3 or 4 R on the win. Like you typically always end up green in those types of situations. Sometimes, of course, like you can just consistently lose and just max out. But the important part is just like cap that out. So basically, like if your average risk reward, like let's say your average one is a 3R, it doesn't make sense to ever lose on any single ticker like more than 3R. Because if you know, let's say like you keep losing 3, 4, 5R, then by the time the trade works, even if you make 3R, it's like you're still red.
Yeah.
The goal is to like keep it so that your losses are small,
yep,
and your wins are big, so that the win eats up all the losses. You don't have to trade as risky as I do. I kind of accept that lower win rate because I like the positioning advantage. I like being in a riskier spot. I can tolerate that. But you could, realistically, you could just have a much higher win rate and what happens is you're going to have less volatility in your equity curve, which is really good. I mean, it's that's probably the most perfect thing for compounding is like, if you have low volatility, then your risk can constantly grow and your account can constantly grow at a more stable pace. And also you can just position size differently. So you could say like, I could risk maybe 2% of my account instead of 1% of my account because my win rate is like 50%. And like, if you plug into like an equity curve sim, you'll see that like on average, your drawdowns are, you know, less than 10%. So if you are a trader who can handle 10% drawdowns, which is not that big of a deal, in my opinion, then you can just position size more to keep continuing growing your account. But whereas like the risk reward approach is not necessarily going to risk more percentage of my account because you can have like insane drawdowns, like 20, 30%, 40% even. That's not really a good thing. So the risk reward aspect of it is just like, can I just continuously take small losses and then be the biggest when I'm going to win? That's like the whole dynamic of risk reward trading. And the reason why like win rate doesn't really matter in that case. It matters somewhat. You don't want to be like 20% or something like that, but
you see,
you know, everyone knows like the basic idea is just if you're going to win three, then you can, and you lose one every single time, then you can have like a, you know, 30% win rate, et cetera, and still be profitable.
Yeah.
You're just playing on the expectation, like a casino, you know, like over hundreds of trades, like it's going to be profitable in the end. That's the whole like philosophy behind it.
Yeah. I remember I've seen your actual like execution charts in which you have like one entry and just hold it all the way through for the all day fade, right? So how do you hold through like all, you know, because not all the fades, they go down just like that, right? How do you hold through all the middle volatility? Do you move your stops? Do you move your risk down? And how do you not get kind of get stopped out in the middle?
It's really all about positioning and where you put your risk level. So like typically I try to, again, like the part of the reason why I have a low win rate is because I want that superior positioning. So I want to be like in a more riskier point, closer to the risk level. And therefore like when the stocks are kind of like consolidating and, you know, chopping around, usually I like to be kind of at the higher end of that range so that I don't have to deal with the emotions. You know, it's completely different.
Yeah.
When you're in closer to the high and you're just like seeing that, you're like, okay, everyone's just fighting it out. I'm chilling. Whereas like if you short at the bottom, you're like every single bounce, oh my God, it's so personal. I don't know what to do. I think that's one aspect of it. But realistically, I think people need to recognize that there's so much noise in the mean reversion.
Yeah.
Mean reversion by concept is kind of like you get in at some point where it's extended and there's a price that it kind of is gravitating towards the mean. So when you're kind of like in at this point and you only got, you know, this far, but the mean is down here, you have to recognize this is all noise. This is something you can completely ignore. And that's where, again, like systematic type of thought process can eliminate the emotions there because you're not having to say, oh, I need to react to this specific moment of a price action or tape or level two. Instead you're seeing it more, hey, this is where I think it should go. It's not there, who cares? That's the idea.
Earlier you mentioned compounding. Are you referring to account compounding?
Yeah, so I'm huge on compounding and just in everything and skills, but particularly in money management.
Okay.
So I like to risk a percentage of my account. So that might not be 1%, but originally I like to risk 1%, somewhere between 1% and 4%. It's typically where I risk nowadays, but essentially like every single day your account's growing, right? If you are adding more P&L to your account, you're going to be able to size bigger just because it's a percentage. It's just a proportion of your account. If you lose, then you size down. This allows you to basically grow your account at this accelerated pace that matches your current performance. So if you have a winning streak, then your risk is going to go up quite substantially. And that allows you to risk more when you're performing better or the market is just kind of going in your favor and it's working for you. And vice versa, if you're in a drawdown, then you should be sizing lower.
Yeah.
A lot of times people, they kind of do it very arbitrarily. And I feel that the compounding just kind of takes care of that equation because it's just a position sizing algorithm. It's like if I lose and I size down. And I like that aspect of trading because what happens is because of a risk reward focus, if you lose, you're just, you know, you're going down slowly. But when you win, you're really taking these big advances and you're really risking more. There's a lot of pitfalls to that. You definitely have to be aware of just not growing too fast. I have systems for that. But that's generally how I do things, just constantly using a fixed percentage of my account to risk and just being aware of the concept of risk of ruin, which is kind of just to say that, let's say you risk 10% of your account on a trade, you might get lucky for some time, but that means in 10 times you're going to blow up your account. Whereas with 1%, you can literally risk, like, you can lose 100 times in a row and you'll still, I mean, you're going to blow up at that point, but if should you be a trader if you lose 100 times in a row? And so you have to kind of really evaluate the drawdowns and risk of ruin and just understand that position sizing is so important. Like, you could, I did this Kelly Criterion simulation, and it was like, oh, you can go, you know, 30% of your account on some of these trades. Well, whoa. What if you lose three times? You're blown up. I did a simulation for my friend, and it showed that he can grow his account from 100K to 20 million. But, like, there's one or two trades where it goes back down all the way to almost zero. So it's kind of like, that's the position sizing. Like, you have to understand risk of ruin first before you start position sizing so aggressively, because people always kind of have these streaks of just, oh, I'm going to win. Hmm. And they feel that, like, you know, who knows if they go to 20 million. But it's like, the fact that you can go all the way back to zero is why people are perpetually stuck in this trading game where they're like, oh, I did everything right. Why did it just go wrong this one time? I just got to do it again. They keep repeating that process. It's all about, like, you have to know that position sizing is so important, because those drawdowns are, that's the thing you have to focus on, not going up.
Especially, I think, in this year and last year, there's a lot of these crazy short squeezes. I think it's that from that, I can see why it's really easy to go back down to zero from, like, a 6-7-figure account.
Yeah, my broker told me that, let's say there's 10 traders, right? Simulating the overall population of traders. Maybe two of them are super good, and then, you know, there's some average traders and then bad traders at the bottom. He said in November, December, 50% of five of those traders all blew up. Like, they're gone.
Oh, man.
So you just have to recognize, being in this game, you know, you have to be one of those survivors. There's a huge survivorship bias, because you only see people who are constantly around.
It's true, yeah.
But even people who have grown their money tremendously have lost it all in an equally spectacular fashion. Like, there was these Chinese liquidation trades, like ZJYL was one of them, yeah, where I knew someone who was risking just 10,000, and it opened up, he lost like 400,000. And it's like, you think you're risking 10,000, okay, now it's gone, right? So
yeah.
That's the aspect of just evaluating what kind of risk you're taking to get there. And, you know, no one could have seen that coming necessarily. That was insane. But just sometimes when money is just coming in too easy, you have to really take a step back and maybe pocket some of that. I'm really big on wiring, because I think that the market is constantly taking from the greedy. It's taking from the people overextending themselves. And people instinctually think, oh, it's going super well, I'm just going to go even bigger next time. When in fact, like, the way that they should be thinking is, like, it's going too well. Like, when is the disaster coming? I need to, like, prepare for that. So I'm constantly just wiring money out of my account in a systematic way. And that allows me to basically weather the storm. So when I know people are going to start getting greedy and things are going to get bad, I'm basically not sized up bigger at that time. And I'm just taking the losses like everyone else. I'm not immune to those losses, but I'm taking those losses, but I'm not as psychologically affected, because I already have taking money out of the account, and I know this is just my trading vehicle. Like, this is my business account. It's not like, it's not my net worth. The mistake people make is they put their whole net worth in trading account. They grew, they might have started, you know, 10K, 30K, grew 200,000, but like that 100,000 might be all the money they have in the world. And if you risk that all the money you have in the world, then your risk of ruin is always there. Whereas if you, let's say you grew it to 100,000, but you wired out like 30 or 40,000, that the account and how you're risking no longer represents even a percentage of your overall net worth, because you might be risking like 1% on you know, like a 50K account instead of a 100K account. And so that allows you to stay in the game for a much longer time and keep showing up. And that's like the biggest thing, is just surviving, because the market's like, it just goes super hard. You know, it's a very hard, intense market. You get blown up. And then there's like easy markets where everything works and it's beautiful. And it's like, if you don't understand that happens all the time, then you just don't understand trading, I think.
I think you have a very like analytical way of systemizing everything you do in trading, like whether it's strategies, whether it's wiring money out, whether it's, you know, risk management. Do you think a lot of these like skills or discipline and how you analyze these things came from your gaming background?
Definitely. But I think I kind of always thought that way just because it's one thing if you're naturally talented. You know, some people, they just kind of show up and they're like amazing at everything, but I never felt really amazing at anything necessarily. So I also thought that I just have to put in more work. So for me, it's just systems are just a way of I can put in extra effort and have it pay off in the same way that maybe someone who has a natural talent for something. So I've always used it as kind of a way to just do what I need to do with a lot of preparation behind it. And so like let's say in gaming, for example, in the game I played called Dota, Defense of the Ancients, it's really important. There's like a strategy component where you have to draft 5 characters and the other team drafts 5 characters. And basically there's so many variables. There's like almost infinite combinations of what can happen. And you know, the way that you deal with that is you just kind of, you settle into a plan and then you just try to like dig into it as much as you can. Like what needs to happen for me to win? What do I need to, you know, go for? What are my objectives? And basically all you have to do is execute on that, because in a world where there's just infinite variables, if you don't kind of control certain aspects of your strategy, then it's just kind of, it's just too chaotic. And some people thrive in chaos. Some people are very reactive and they can figure that out. But for me, it's never been that way. So it's just, my mind immediately goes to strategy. I mean, even as a trader, for example, I feel like there are so many emotions, and you know how instinctually we all make the wrong decision all the time. Like the way we feel is opposite of what's good.
Right.
So by eliminating that from my trading, I felt like that's an advantage, because they always say that, you know, and I definitely feel that the algorithms, the way that traders trade around each other, it's just it's a continuous emotional battle. It's like, oh my God, I missed that. I have to get in. And then it rips the other way. Or everything like that. It's just strong moves cause strong reactions. And I don't want to be part of that game because I don't think that I can react properly in those situations.
And I know you are constantly wiring money out, like you mentioned earlier. Where do you put your money nowadays, now that it's out of your trading account? Where do you invest them? Where do you put them?
So it being from California, it's really important that for tax purposes that I'm making investments that are not necessarily just passive cash flow, but actually deductible from my income.
Okay.
So I'm looking for like depreciable assets, or I'm looking for investments that reduce tax liability first. And then once I've done that, basically, then I look for passive investments. Like anything passive, I'll invest in my friend's hedge fund or invest in something that just returns, you know, very small over time, just very safe. But the depreciable assets are like, some people do real estate. I don't want to do real estate because it's just, I got this advice earlier, just, hey, you're a trader, just do trading. You know, that's going to take care of everything. You don't want to split your attention between like, you know, dealing with tenants or like, you know, whatever like that. And to me, that made a lot of sense. I just don't like dealing with people. So I usually hire like third party operators. So these are companies that are just like, they take care of the manual labor, and you basically just put up the cash and then depreciate whatever asset it is. So one of the assets I did was ATM machines.
And okay.
ATM machines over time, basically, over 8 years, they depreciate, so you can write off the cost of that, and then they return a passive income over time. So that's just one thing I do. And there are many more, but it really depends on like your liability. If, for example, your liability is kind of low, I would just kind of like stay in cash, put in the hedge fund, something liquid that I can pull out. And then if you have a high liability, then you would then like put it into investments that reduce your liability overall. So that's like, there's like a whole thing in California. Like I wouldn't go through all that effort if I lived somewhere with less taxes.
Right. That's interesting. ATM machine is rare. I don't hear that a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I also do life insurance.
Oh, okay. I do that too in Canada. Yeah.
It's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you, after so many years of trading, almost a decade now, how do you stay passionate? And like, do you have any other passion projects, ventures outside of trading?
So I'm like, I think in trading, you have to be really focused on the performance aspect of it. You know, the feeling of improving, I think that's more motivating than like any result. So you kind of have to train your brain essentially to, it's really cheesy and cliche, but you have to fall in love with the process of trading. And for me, the process is irrespective of the money, because I know the money follows good process.
Yeah.
So as long as I feel that I can improve, and, you know, I make this joke with my friends, it's kind of like, you're just learning every single day. It's like, no matter how much experience you get, there's always something new that you haven't seen. It's like, it's just infinite amounts of mistakes that you're making, or just things constantly reoccur with you. It's just like, you know, much like the market cycle, you also have a cycle of humility and just overall greed and just like a massive ego. It's like managing that cycle is really, really important. So for me, it's kind of like, no matter how much you invest into, like, let's say coaching or therapy or whatever, it's kind of like, man, you always make the same mistakes eventually. So for me, the constant chase of like trying to reduce the impact of those, or just kind of going after it, improving the performance, that's for me is just the most motivating aspect of it. And as long as I can constantly improve, even if it's just 1% like every month, for me that's enough. And eventually, you know, I think that trading is just that kind of infinite game. I don't think you can really master it necessarily. But if I did, let's say, master my strategy, then I would just move on to another strategy. I like to play other games, like competitive games still on the side, and see how well I can do at that. So one of these games I was playing is like a mobile game. And I just play it while I'm trading, because it's easier to just detach from the market.
Wait, while you're trading?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Your phone's here and then...
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
oh,
like,
okay.
I have a lot of time to just play games too, so...
Okay.
Like, I just got rank one in the game I was playing, and it's like, I just like competing at something on the side. That to me is like really fun, because it's also very, it's also for me, like, as a gamer, you constantly have teammates, and the teammates let you down all the time. I mean, as a leader, you take responsibility. Like, you're like, okay, it's my fault. I need to improve. Like, don't get me wrong. I take a lot of responsibility, but some things are just BS. So,
okay.
I have a lot of trauma from like dealing with people who suck. And so I look for like single player games where I can do really well. Like, trading is a single player game I can do really well. I have like a huge chip on my shoulder from just, you know, feeling not good enough because you're in a team and you're not getting the results you want. But knowing you're putting in like the effort, and you know you're like doing the work that you need to do. And so when I play all these games like kind of my own, like getting to a good spot is something that I really strive for, because it constantly helps me just understand, like, okay, you are diligent, you are working hard, you're doing the things you need to do. And that just helps reinforce kind of my trading as well, because I'm like constantly getting this this boost of like, oh, I can learn a new skill, I can do something and succeed at it. And as long as it's something within my control, my total control, then I will do well. So I just jump from game to game and try to see how far I can get. And that's kind of like the thing I do on the side.
So do you think you'll always be trading?
No. I wanted to retire back in COVID.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Relatively soon. But for me, the motivation is just knowing that there's such a high ceiling, and being exposed to people who have done just way, way better than I have just really lends its way to just having this huge motivation. Just like, that's possible. And I want to achieve that first to the best of my ability. Even if I get halfway there or 25% of the way there, if that was the best I could do, then I would have no regrets about it. But in terms of trading, it's really stressful, honestly. It's something that I want to slow down on. Sometimes I take off like Fridays or Mondays here and there, and do something else outside of trading, just go outside, play some sports or whatever. And for me, that is a better way to live. I think being attached to the market is something that I've gotten used to over time, just always here every single day.
Yeah.
On the West Coast, you're up early in the morning.
What time do you wake up?
Sometimes I'm up like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And it's just too much. And I know, like, if you want to be there at the beginning of pre-market, it's like 1 a.m. And for me, that's not feasible. I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So just constantly having a sleep deprivation. I think trading is just non-linear. You know, you will be able to, if you do it well, you'll be able to retire earlier than most professions. The money is much more significant. It depends on if you're putting into, like we talked about, these investments. It's just, those are things that I know will return over time, that, you know, you can just put it into something more safe. It will grow. It's not a big deal. Trading as a sport, it's fun, but I wouldn't trade if there was no money in trading, right? Like, some people say they love trading, but you wouldn't trade if there was no money.
So
we're trading for the money. if you get to the point where money is less of a deal for you and you can put it into smart investments or things that will just grow over time, then I don't see a reason to constantly go for it. And I'm not the kind of person who feels like I need to have like infinite money to accomplish all these big goals and things like that. For me, it's just my goal with money is just I never want to worry about anything. Like if I want to if I want to fly somewhere, I don't want to think about the cost. If I want to buy something, I don't want to have stress out about it. And so for me, like if I have that, which I do, which is it's more than enough for me. I don't feel the stress. But yeah, at this point, it's just all about the potential. Until I feel I hit my potential, then I won't stop.
Do you think it's still a good time for new traders to get started with trading? And like if they are starting out, is there three tips that you'll give them?
It is definitely a good time to start trading. It's never been easier to learn the things you need to learn because the resources are all there. It wasn't like this before. There's so many good traders speaking out now. You know, you have, like back then, you would seldomly hear from a good trader, or wouldn't even know if they're a good trader. Now everyone's sharing their thoughts constantly. There's like a million resources out there now. And so for that reason, you can accelerate your growth, and there are people who are willing to share the information. So that's number one, why it's really nice. But as a tip, I would basically, it sucks as you're a YouTuber, but like, I would kind of get off YouTube.
Okay.
The reason why is because I actually think Twitter is actually a really good resource, probably the best resource for me, because you can find individuals, and maybe it's like this, maybe it's okay for YouTube, but what I'm saying is like, on mass, there's a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Whereas how I mentioned at the very beginning, you know, like I found one person or like two people that I just really dug into it. And that did way more for me than anything else. So if you kind of like resonate with someone or some kind of channel, whatever, just go for it. And there is a natural element of market tuition where traders, it's a perilous journey. There's a lot of traps. And so you like find someone, you think they're legit, and then you learned or not, but at least you learned what not to do, or you learned something through that process, and eventually you'll find something or someone that really resonates with you and works. And so that's the main thing to do. You know, I've tried to help like friends and family learn how to trade and stuff like that. And a lot of times they kind of like don't follow through, even though they could potentially have like a very good like mentorship. And I think ultimately what I learned is that people who have a passion for this, people who are self-motivated and want to make something better for themselves or like really love the process, I think you have to really lean into that because not everyone has that. I mean, they may have the mentorship or whatever available to them, but the drive is something you can't replace. And so I think people who have the drive are in a much better position to succeed at this game, because the statistics that, you know, only a certain amount of people succeed at this applies because there's a broad amount of people who don't really have that motivation or like love for the game or really respect the game.
Don't work that hard.
Yeah. They don't work. That's most people.
Yeah.
But if you are one of those people, your chances are actually much bigger than that because you're part of a small group of people who actually want to succeed. I think it's about 1% of 1% of people actually really want to do this seriously and put in the work. So if that's you, I would definitely do it because trading is one of those things where it's so much better in terms of income than like almost any other profession. And it's a skill you can learn on your own, at your own pace. You could put in, you know, 20 hours a day if you wanted, and do this for years. And if you hit kind of those timelines that I'm talking about, like 1, 2, 3 years, put in full focus into it, like you will be able to make enough money to quit your job probably. And it only goes up from there. I mean, over the course of a lifetime, just the compounded skill of trading, it's something that everyone has to deal with. I mean, most people have retirement accounts, family, friends, it's just a very important skill in general, just to understand how the markets work. You might as well be proficient at it and take advantage of it because there's so many opportunities.
What would be like a tip for the traders who are looking to develop a simple strategy to at least get started, right?
Okay. So the biggest thing actually is to put yourself out there and start networking. So there are plenty of opportunities. Let's say, for example, every year there's Traders for Cause.
Yeah.
And both of us have been there before. And it's just an extremely good opportunity to meet other people who are serious about trading. And one of the biggest boosts for me in trading overall has just been to connect with people who are interested in the same thing as me. And we pool our resources together. So let's say you have a group of people, 4 or 5 guys or girls, and you come together and you like say, like, hey, I learned from this guy, or I learned this thing, or I read this book, here's this information I picked up, here's the strategy that I've been working on. When you have all these people together, you can really accelerate your learning curve and kind of lean into one thing that makes more sense to you. And then once you've done that, you just kind of keep expanding your network in that niche and just keep working with people who are serious. And I think if you do that, you will find the information you need to find. Again, it's never been easier. And the people who are very serious actually, more or less, like, we're a very small community. So you're only really a degree of separation from anyone. You know, it's like, for example, you know Bao, I know Bao. Bao was there way back in the day. You just interviewed him, and like, it's just, everyone knows Tim Sykes. Nate came from Tim Sykes and IU, and like, you know, it's just literally everyone knows everyone, I think.
Yeah.
At this point. So it's a small community in small caps, but even so, if you're not trading small caps, like, let's say you're not interested in shorting, there are people like Kula Maggie, who's like 9-figure trader, sharing his strategy, literally. And you can learn from his community. There are people who stalk everything he does, who takes notes on all his information, record all his streams and everything like that. And there's just so much information. I've seen it being applied to lots of different things, even crypto. I've seen, like, my friend, he applied Kula Maggie strategy to Bitcoin, and that's working out for him. So it's like, you know, it's not to say like, oh, he only trades this, that's all I need to learn. Like, a lot of times with traders sharing edge and strategies, there are like universal principles that you can apply towards something that interests you or something that you're developing as well. So don't feel like you have to like find that exact right person, but rather find the credible source that has good information you can transfer, because trading is mostly parallel to one another, unless it's like something really crazy like options. You know, the options, I don't understand that there's so much to the gamma, vig, you know, theta and all that. And I'm like, well, I trade stocks, I just buy and sell. So,
okay,
you know, it's just easier for me to understand, but you know, yeah.
Thank you so much, Brian, for today's interview and a lot of insights that you shared with our audience. Where can people find you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, on Twitter, you can follow me at Brian Lee Trades. There you'll find basically everything, or you can just go to brianleetrades.com. There's a lot of different links, like my blogs and my stuff. The last thing I want to say is just, I basically briefly discuss these topics because I want to just introduce you guys to it, but there's so much more depth and nuance to it that you'll find on my feed. So please visit that, especially if there's information that like kind of pique your interest, and just look it up. There'll be so much more on those topics, I guarantee.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thanks.
So what do you guys think about this systematic trading approach? As trading became more and more popular, I think a lot of retail traders should definitely incorporate this analytical approach to gain their competitive edge. Even if you're just a trader starting out, you can still start tracking the key criteria of your strategies and learn how to backtest them with data. If you want to continue learning from experienced pro traders, then check out this playlist over here.